This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.
Ian Boltzmann. FUBAR Radio.
Why don't you just fuck off? Welcome to the show. It is the 27th of January, this fine year of 2020. It's actually our first one, isn't it, Nat?
Yes, my mic isn't up.
I know, I did that on purpose. Right. I'm trying to multitask here at the moment.
Mic three.
Sorry.
Mic three, there we go. It's a good start.
Welcome to the show. On today's show, jam-packed with celebrity fare.
Loads of them.
I know, right? 4:30 today, we have Sophie Eldred in the studio, who'll be promoting series 26 of Doctor Who.
It is,
Blu-ray.
Actually.
That's true. Isn't that mental?
That it's 26?
No, not that. It's just, well, it's way more than that now,
loads,
isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's mental that it's like... We'll talk about it. Right. It's just still a thing.
Big thing.
And it's on Blu-ray and stuff.
Yeah.
It wasn't even filmed in high def.
I know.
Then at 5 p.m, Sean Ryder is on the phone.
Twisting my melons, man.
That's gone and done a dreadful producing job there.
But how?
On the phone.
I couldn't get him in. He's not in London.
Can you imagine though, if you were mates with Sean Ryder, ringing him up, you'd be like, I can't deal with them calls. If he was ringing you at 4 a.m. and stuff, yet we're actively volunteering to have him on the phone.
Well,
he's on the phone anyway.
We can ask him anything.
All right. He's talking about an evening with Sean Ryder. Which is surely every night.
Well, it's today as well.
Sean Ryder.
Sort of, yeah, it's an evening today.
For him, that's at the Water Rats on the 21st of Feb. Then at 5:30, Magical Bones is in the studio. No idea. Talking about his show, Black Magic.
He's a breakdancing magician.
Now.
And star of the West End hit show, Impossible.
Oh, I've only got 9 seconds. I'll tell you when we come back in.
Ian Boltzmann.
Turn them headphones.
Turn to the left.
What?
Turn the silver one to the left.
I know how volume works, Matt.
Oh, okay. All right.
I know how to do a volume knob.
Do you?
Now, what I was doing there...
Yes.
...privately was I was recording a video for Patreon showing how I work, how the FUBAR show works, the buttons and stuff.
Right.
And I just got... I was doing really well.
And
then
pieces.
I did one thing wrong and then just snowballed, didn't it?
So that wasn't live going out on any platform. That's just a little thing for you
to... No, wouldn't do that, mate. Too risky.
Okay.
Far too risky to do something.
Yeah, very
live.
True, very true.
Especially when you're like me. I think Magical Bones, our third guest of today.
Yes.
And forgive me, Magical, the less well-known of the three guests.
Correct.
With Sophie Eldred, very well-known from Doctor Who. Sean Ryder, obviously, from his music stuff. I predict now...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who Magical Bones is.
Okay.
I don't know if it's a gentleman,
it's
lady,
a
group.
It's a gentleman.
I've got no idea. Right, okay. So Magical Bones, the gentleman Magical Bones, I predict now, I may be wrong,
mm-hmm.
is going to be the best guest.
Why? Okay, I like that prediction. Let's run with that.
That's normally what happens, isn't it?
Yeah,
I don't think the other two are not going to be good guests. I think they're going to
be great guests.
They're very well versed in media training and stuff. Sophie Eldred does it very well. Sean Ryder, touch and go.
I would say media training.
Depends what mood
he doesn't
it is
need
in.
It, does he?
I bet you he's had some media training that he probably walked out of going, oh, fucking bollocks.
Well, let's never forget what happened to TFI Friday.
Yeah, but that was intentional, wasn't it? It wasn't like they did it by accident.
Well, no, they said do not... Well, we should say what happened was TFI Friday, a show that Chris Evans presented for quite a few years on Channel 4.
It was amazing, wasn't it?
Friday night, I think it started at 6, 6
must
till 7.
Must-see television.
It was amazing.
Potentially, I would say, the last must-see television there ever was.
Yeah, I think you might be right, because amazing guests on there.
Yeah, but it was
and
all
music.
Very well put together and produced.
Yeah.
Danny Baker and Will McDonald was the producer on it.
And it had kind of characters like Andrew the Barman, and it had different people within the show, and features for Will. And great, great show. But live...
It also, I should say, I worked there. Not when TFI was doing it.
Right.
I worked at Riverside Studios. It's now been knocked down.
Oh, is it? Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah, it's been rebuilt
shame.
Now as a new studio.
Okay.
I've not been there since, but apparently it's very nice. It's state-of-the-art and stuff. But there was something amazing about working in that studio, which was the studio that TFI was recorded in. In the big, they used to have a big area downstairs where the bands would perform.
Yeah, huge.
So that was the main studio at Riverside.
Okay.
that they just sort of converted. It was a set.
Well, and then they had the upstairs bit, which had the bar in it,
which
where Chris
really
Evans...
there. Now, that's a green room for guests of TV shows. It was now.
Yeah.
So you could just walk up, and you could do that walk where guests would walk across the balcony and stuff. So you could do that still until they knocked it down.
Oh, that would have been really great.
And then back into the room where TFI, the actual presenting set was.
Yeah.
Just a room.
Yeah, a room where had a table in it, Chris and the guests there, and it had a little side area where at the back where people
used
to
window. So the window was still there.
Yeah.
Many years later. And it was really exciting to actually do it. It never got old. It was like, God, this is TFI Studio.
Because it was such a brilliant show. Chris Evans was excellent.
Yeah.
And it was live for quite a while. And then what happened was, I think it would have been, Back Break
was
or Happy
Break.
Mondays? Right. Because it was live, there was a swear word, which they got reprimanded about.
Was it 6 or 7 on a Friday it was live?
It was 6 p.m.
Was it
on a Friday, because Channel 4 News used to be on at 7, or still is, in fact. And so they were told, like, we can't have any more swearing.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
Red Rag Trouble.
So, of course, they booked Black Grape again.
Yeah.
And they...
Pretty Vacant.
Of course, Pretty Vacant.
There was one bit where he went, I'm pretty fucking vacant.
Yes, and of course, the way that Sex Pistols sing it is definitely emphasising the word vacant. So, and it was not live after that anymore.
Is that true?
Yes, that is true. They couldn't have it live.
They got a delay. Was it just
It was in delay. Yeah, after that.
I recall it at the time. I think at the time I thought that they were knobs for doing that.
Okay, because they did it deliberately, knowing.
Yeah, I think at the time I thought, well, that it doesn't impact on you because it gives you a bit of like notoriety and stuff, but it does impact on other people's jobs and stuff. Right. You know what I mean?
I do, and I remember Chris Evans saying, I will give you my shoes if you don't swear. Yeah, and then it cut to him with his head in his hands. Of course, like, he was laughing it off and being like, well, that's us not live anymore.
But at the same time, it was very entertaining and funny.
Yeah, it was
But
great,
I think
yeah.
I probably thought in kind of a pious way. I was like, oh, that's not on that.
No,
that's not fair.
Because it will, someone's going to get in trouble for that.
But I love Black Grape. And I always did. I always loved Black
Grape. Do you not like Happy Mondays?
Never into them.
Oh, God, they're amazing.
Totally passed me by. I know stuff retrospectively.
Yeah.
About Happy Mondays and, 24-hour party people and all that sort of, the
movie. I just watched that film again recently.
Great,
and I really like the story of Factory Records, and I really like the character of Tony Wilson.
Yeah. May he rest in peace.
Yeah.
I met Tony Wilson once.
Did you?
But I've got no recollection of it.
What? How come?
Because I was only a little boy.
Oh, right, okay, fine.
I met him at Morecambe Light, apparently.
Was he switching them on?
I don't know. Maybe just a visit. I've got no recollection.
Who told
of this.
You met him then?
Parents told me.
That was it. No more
years
information.
Later, that he, and this was before photo phones and all them, that, camera phones and that.
Photo phones. Amazing.
This was before photos of phones or phones that had cameras on them.
Yeah.
And apparently made a bit of a fuss over me and stuff, but I just don't recall it. Oh, I've got no recollection.
It's still a good story.
I think I would have liked Tony Wilson very much.
I think so. He had a very much a sense of humour about himself.
Yeah.
And from watching 24-hour party people, was even like, that's not actually how it happened, but it's how Tony would have wanted it to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was nice.
I don't know if he was miffed in real life about 24-hour party people, the movie. I mean, he did a commentary on it.
Oh, I thought he was away when that came out. Was he still alive?
No, he's in the film. He's briefly in the film playing a TV producer.
Of course, yes. Now I remember that now.
So he did a commentary where he was sort of slagging off Coogan and slagging
That's
off...
That's it, yeah.
I can't remember the man who... What's the man...
Who played who?
No, the man who directed it. Really fair. Michael Winterbottom.
Michael Winterbottom,
Just sort of slagging them off for the stitch-up job and all that sort of stuff. So there were things in that movie, like, for example, him having sex with prostitutes in the back of a van with Peter Kay.
Yeah, that's a great scene.
But that didn't happen.
Oh, did it not?
No, that didn't happen at all. Or Tony Wilson maintains it didn't happen, and the producer said, no, that was just a story device within it.
I mean, it worked in the film. It's a good story device.
Yeah. So I think he was kind of like apologetic to his ex-wife, saying that this isn't what happened.
Right, okay.
This is, so don't be thinking that's how it was. But no, I think he was a terrible loss to the entertainment world. Because what I think about Tony Wilson is, and I think this strongly, and I guess other, but we could even ask Ryder about it today and see what his take on it is now, retrospectively after the man's away, but because I know they fell out from time to time, Sean Ryder and Tony Wilson, but I felt that he's something that was it was easy to call a twat, and he was easy to sort of go it was shit and stupid and that, because he did mainstream TV whilst also maintaining a very credible record company and maintaining his artistic interests as well. He just funded one from the other one.
But he was kind of a well-known face in Manchester, wasn't he, before Factory, for the local news.
He
and
did
stuff.
Credible telly, but he also did local news, and he also did like fluff pieces and all that sort of thing. So it was easy. It was easy to sort of cast him off as a kind of Madeley kind of figure, Richard Madeley figure.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't mean that as a disservice to Richard Madeley, by the way, but I think there were two things going on in his artistic pursuits, and I think having the integrity to stick to his guns with the credible stuff and to actually, and he risked everything. Plenty of times,
and he lost a lot of time as well, didn't he?
I think is now missing in mainstream media. I think
the characters.
I can't think of anyone like that now who would. Chris Evans was probably the next one who would literally put a bomb under something and just go, "Do you know what? No, fuck it. I'm not being controlled by the thing that I've made popular."
Right, so you'd buy it, Chris Evans, like with Virgin Radio, wouldn't it? I'll just buy that radio station.
Exactly, that sort of thing. So that kind of attitude, I kind of like.
Yeah.
Because it puts the finger up to the people within the business. We know who these people are. It was just dicks. You know, they're just like horrible dicks with no artistic credibility or artistic intelligence. They don't know what's good, really.
But lots of people have opinion on things from all walks of life without actually knowing about who the person or the product is, but will still tell you what's wrong with it.
But particularly in the media, they enforce that. It's not just they have the opinion.
They enforce that opinion. They make the changes.
Because they are the money men and, you know, that sort of money women in some cases, fewer cases, but generally speaking. And I like talent that can go, well, no, I'm not going to do another series of whatever. I'm not going to stay on the breakfast show, whatever. And if I want to have Fridays off, I'm having Fridays off because I need it for other pursuits and stuff.
That was Chris Evans.
Yeah, I'm still giving you 4 days a week. I'm telling you now, for my life, I can't do 5 days a week anymore. So it's up to you. You can sack me or you can give me Fridays off or we'll just end the show. And I think people feel a kind of power and control when they think you need the job more than they need you to be on the station or whatever.
I'm not really sure that there are many people, as you said, like that anymore, that a boss wouldn't go from the people I can think of, wouldn't just go, well, have every day off then, because we can get somebody else to do the show, no problem. Yeah. Like, I don't think, and obviously Chris Evans is back at Virgin Radio now doing the breakfast show, and on his breakfast show there's no adverts on it.
Is it not?
No.
So there you go. So basically what you do with your, and it's not, I don't know Chris Evans at all. He's from Warrington, you know, I know that much, and I know he worked with Sidey and all that sort of business, but I don't know him at all in real life. I don't think I've ever met him. In fact, I have met him once. I met him at a Star Wars premiere.
Oh, okay.
And I say met him, I sat behind him.
Right. Counts? Still counts.
Does it? Very tall man.
Yeah. Like, was he, really?
Yeah, huge. Yeah, massive tall man. Yeah, like Richard Osman or something.
Oh, wow.
Not that big, but he is tall.
Yeah.
I think I don't know if he's a twat. Basically, in business, I don't know. I think most people that are rich probably have a bit of twattiness to them in order to become that rich and have business acumen. But
people get called twats as well if they know what they want and they don't want to compromise as well, right?
But I don't think it's being flouncy, and I don't think it's being, do you know who I am? And I don't think it's being, getting above yourself. I think it's having an understanding of the way that it all works and going, no, I am actually the money here. So I should be able to make reasonable requests in order to keep myself safe or to do other projects, so I'm not just locked down to just doing your thing on your station.
I
think that's actually a reasonable request. I remember at the time, because I used to listen to Chris Evans' breakfast show at that point.
Was that when it was on Virgin or Radio, or Radio 1 before that? It was, didn't it?
Wasn't it Virgin 2 Radio 1, or was it the other way around?
I thought it was Radio...
I think it was Radio 1 where he was saying about having Fridays.
Yeah, and that's why I thought he went to... I mean, I'll have to check, we'll fact check that, but I thought that's why he went to Virgin, because of the Radio 1 saying you can't have the Fridays.
Well, I definitely listened to the Radio 1 show, for sure, when they used to do 4DJ and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, it was great. So I listened to it on my way into work. I was doing a day job at the time. Every single morning I would listen to it. I'd have it on in the house and then in the car when I went to work. And it was brilliant radio, really was. It might not have stood the test of time if you heard it now.
No, because he had his little crew, the Holly Hot Lips.
Yeah,
and
the posse thing.
Yeah, all his, yeah, his posse around
and
him.
The DJ was there was a guy called Dan.
The Wheels of Steel. That was that John was somebody, yeah, with the Wheels of Steel.
I think that was Dan, I think.
No, it was, I remember, because he had his own show on Virgin, the Wheels of Steel, John somebody.
Well, they're all dead now anyway.
No, they're not.
Sophie,
she's running late. Sophie's running late. Great start to the year.
How can a time traveller ever run late?
How's
that even possible?
She should be fine.
Well, give her a text and say she's running late. Get in the TARDIS. Send herself back and give herself a bit longer to get here.
And then, get up again this morning, but on time. And then be fine.
In conclusion, in defence of Chris Evans, and it may be a misguided defence, but I think I like when talent, or the people that generate the actual art, for want of a better word, understand how precious they are and don't let people take advantage of that to make their own money, or to, you know, I guess, you know, for producers to go off and be like, oh yeah, I produced that show, and I don't mean, this isn't aimed at you, but you know what I mean? When they go off and take full credit for stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I do that as well.
So do what?
Take full credit for everything.
For this show?
Yeah, I take everything.
Do you not, like, have a degree of shame?
No, not at all.
I would. I don't tell people.
Ooh, whilst I forget, Frank Sidebottom.
Yes.
So I've forgotten about this. I rewatched the film Filth recently, based on the Irvine Welsh book with James McAvoy, who is incredible. Oh, everyone's good in it.
Yeah.
But I forgot. Like
the book's brilliant, though. Have you read the book?
Yeah, I have, yeah.
So really that should be an unfilmable book.
I think quite a few of his books should be Trainspotting. When I read that, I was like, oh, okay. They've taken lots out that were in the book, but not in the film.
Tons, yeah.
But in Filth, I forget that when he calls up Eddie Marsden's wife, he does an impression of Frank Sidebottom, doesn't he?
Because that is in the book.
Right.
So yeah, this was after Chris died, did that. It always slightly annoys me that Eddie Marsden doing that, and when James McAvoy does it as well.
Why?
It's such a bad impression of Frank Sidebottom.
Do you think?
Yeah,
because
really,
when I watched it really and it cuts to the TV and James McAvoy doing it.
It sounds more like Sean Ryder with a squeaky voice. It's such a bad impression of Frank Sidebottom.
Right.
But yeah, there's a bit of Frank's Fantastic Shed Show on the screen and stuff.
God, he's good in that film, James McAvoy, isn't he?
Frank Sidebottom was good in the Fantastic Shed Show. And by good, I mean awful, but that was what made it funny.
Because I've seen that Chris TV documentary now.
Do you like it?
I too, my favourite dinner would be cheese on toast.
What?
I agree with that. Within it, he says, or his ex-wife says, that he just was happy having cheese on toast for dinner all the time. And
that's
like,
what you... So that's
my takeaway.
So you condensed an artistic life.
Yeah.
A commitment to the art form at expense of his own health, his own sanity and his financial stability. You condensed down to, yes, I like that film because I like cheese on toast as well.
No, I agreed. I was like, that's a great dinner. That is actually a perfect dinner, cheese on toast.
I don't reckon... And this might be controversial. I don't think that Chris Seavey liking cheese on toast is what you should be taking away from that film.
I enjoyed it very much.
I thought it was a great one. I actually did think it was a great one as a movie.
Chris Seavey?
No, the film.
Filth?
No.
Which one?
The Chris Seavey story, yeah.
Frank. Yeah, the Chris Seavey story. Being Frank.
Steve Sullivan's film.
Yeah.
It was really well done.
Yeah, and I saw Johnny popped up.
Yeah, and Phil. Phil's in it.
Yeah?
Yeah, Phil Fletcher. Not me, though.
Well, it's nice that we start the year with some film chat again. We've been doing that at the end of last year, and we've got the film chat out of the way.
Do you think we have? I think we only just briefly mentioned film stuff there.
Well, we can come back to it. It can be a two-part. I saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and loved it.
Yeah, good, innit?
Yeah, I absolutely loved it.
Didn't we say we were going to discuss it? Didn't we say that we gave people a chance to go and watch it so that we didn't spoil it?
Yeah.
And we were going to, is that true? Have I remembered that right?
I mean, I don't know that. I don't remember that happening, but let's just say that happened.
It's been out long enough now
for you to have watched it.
It has, but I only saw it quite recently.
So did I, actually, over Christmas.
Yeah, so... And I really wouldn't want to ruin it.
What I would say is, because Abby here watched it, and she didn't... Because she didn't know anything about Charles Manson or the events in that film.
Totally.
So if you don't know anything about it when you're watching that film... There's moments in the film, and particularly the ending, it's going to mean nothing to you.
You have to have some knowledge of what happened with the Manson murders.
Because I thought it was a really good ending.
I thought it was
amazing.
And I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know.
The twist, as it were.
Yeah.
But you knew.
Because you know that the family of the. What's her name?
Sharon Tate.
Tate's family opposed the film.
They did, and they were also unhappy that it was going to be coming out on the anniversary of her dying.
But then Tarantino sent them the script and told them what his intentions were, and they retracted their opposition.
Right.
They said, no, I actually think he's really got a brilliant idea.
Well, all that I was reading before was that, what's her name, Margot, is it Robbie? Didn't really say a lot of them, didn't have a big part. But when I watched it, I didn't think that.
She was brilliant in it.
Yeah.
And also, it was that thing of going, you can't equate presence in a film with how many lines you've got.
No. Have you seen The Irishman?
Yes.
So obviously there was a thing about Anna Paquin as well in that. She doesn't say anything for most of the film, does she?
Right.
But when she does, it's an effective line towards the end to Robert De Niro.
It's one of them, isn't it? It's like, they're the wrong targets, them things.
Yeah.
That's wrong. That's not the right way of making your point. It doesn't, amount of lines in a production does not equate your importance in it.
Well, the Scorsese thing that I read for a course on Twitter from a few people was... Right. One of the only lead females, and she's got the least amount of lines.
Right.
And I didn't think of that. I thought more of it as the character that she is, her not speaking to her father is very effective, and we knew why.
Yeah,
and her saying that at the end,
it's bonkers.
Like, destroys him.
But
so,
it's not. But that's amateurs.
Yeah.
Assessing artistic credibility without any understanding of what makes things like that. It's like, if it was the Royal Ballet.
Yeah.
How could you do it then? None of them are talking then. So how could you then decide who has the biggest presence? Who's got top billing
and stuff?
Who's
on stage more? I don't know. Maybe that would be how
it would be. Who makes the most impact within
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
And Margot Robbie, in that movie, is fucking brilliant. And she doesn't say much, but she acts from beginning to end. She encompasses the character, and you feel a genuine emotional attachment to that character.
Yeah, you do. And and also because you think you know what's going to happen, and it doesn't.
Yeah.
So you do have an emotional attachment. I mean, it's not even a spoiler because it's very well documented what happened to Sharon Tate.
Yeah, Sharon Tate was killed in the
She was killed,
in,
yeah.
Horrifically as well.
Yeah,
and awful.
She was pregnant,
and she was
heavily
well.
Pregnant.
Yeah, all
yeah.
that sort of stuff. The thing with that movie, this is what I felt, is I'd rather give credit to someone, both the director and the performer, for managing to do that without lines, for managing
yeah,
to, you know,
yeah,
without
yeah.
many lines.
Yeah.
For actually conveying what she conveyed. So both the credit to her for the ability to do that
mm-hmm.
and the ability to get that across on screen without having to say all the time, I'm feeling tired, I'm feeling happy, you know, without actually voicing
yeah.
it. Or, oh, I'm really happy. Oh, I went to the movie today, I was really happy because everyone was laughing at the film that I'm in. So rather than voicing that, you get all those things coming across just by her performance. And she, why would she be talking in a fucking cinema when she's watching a film?
You can see what emotion she's going through. She is excellent. I mean, obviously, Tarantino is foot fetish has gone out of control in that film.
I've only heard about this recently.
Do you not know?
No, I didn't know anything about it.
In most of his films, you've seen in Jackie Brown, is the Bridget Fonda scene where it pans from the feet up and her feet are in it all over.
Is that a thing, though? Is he actually into
Yeah,
thing?
Uma
that,
Thurman, obviously Pulp Fiction with the dancing,
yeah,
with
yeah,
the feet,
yeah,
like he is into feet. And in this film, like I would have to say I'd be pretty pissed off if I'm in a cinema and she's got dirty feet as well.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Dirty
yeah.
feet hanging over the seat. I'd be like, what the hell's going on here?
I never noticed that.
I did, it was making me laugh.
I've never noticed that in his films. But I'd give equal credit to Margot Robbie and equal credit to Tarantino
mm-hmm.
and whatever studio was involved as well for actually going, yeah, no, we trust you on that. That
yeah,
is...
Yeah.
For not going, no, hang on, she's box office. She fucking talks all the way through this. It's like, no, she doesn't need to.
Yeah.
And from what Margot Robbie said as well, as
yeah.
I understand, she's said...
Yeah, she's
no,
fine.
No,
same as Anna Paquin was fine with
that's
it,
that's how they wanted to do it as well.
I would say as well, Brad Pitt and Leonardo DiCaprio, two people that I think are good actors,
yeah.
but are not my favourite actors,
same.
Are amazing in the film.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely amazing. And the Manson murders at the end, murderers.
Yeah.
Like, that girl is proper crazy.
Yeah. So they
she had a brilliant performance.
But Pitt and DiCaprio show their acting chops. They actually
oh,
show
God,
where
yeah.
it'd be easy to dismiss them as, like, you know, popular cinema people.
Oh, no,
but they do show that they basically do what Johnny Depp pretends to.
In every film. Yeah. Since the dawn of time.
And that's all I want to say about that.
General Custer was a soldier man with a horse and a cowboy hat. You know it's Will, it's really Will.
Frank Sidebottom with Mr. Custard. And you know what? I enjoyed that so much. I'm playing another Frank Sidebottom song straight away. And I don't care what you think. Stop listening to it if you want. I don't care. I'm going to play another Frank Sidebottom song. I'm going to play it, Oh Supermom. And then I'm going to get Sophie Eldred in the studio. I'm going to have a right good chat to her. And then after she goes away, I'm going to have a right good chat with Sean Ryder. And after he goes away, I'm going to have a right good chat with Magical Bones. But for the time being, just to give us a bit of coverage time here while we get guests into the studio, I'm playing Oh Supermom by Frank Sidebottom. Thank you.
Oh, the vital Lord Supply has disappeared into space.
Bit of like after chat on this song.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
There we go, it's definitely finished now. Right, welcome back. We are now joined in the studio by Sophie Eldred. We're going to be talking about Series 26 of Doctor Who on Blu-ray. But also, you just dropped a bombshell when you came in. By the way, forgive my producer who told you how to use a microphone
okay.
when you came in.
I've already explained why I did
I
it.
I do apologise.
That's all right.
I tell literally every single guest that comes in on this show, why have you just picked on this one with Sophie now? Every single guest for years
for
I've told
reason,
this to.
Today, Nat, that felt
it's
more...
It's because I'm so old and
right.
you're thinking, right, she's...
No,
it's
the young one.
Yeah, I felt like she was patronising an old lady.
Oh, wow. Wow. No, I wasn't, Sophie. As I said, it was because we had
know.
A guest in last 2 weeks ago who I said the exact same thing to and spoke anywhere but into the mic.
Right, okay. I've got one more thing to say about
yeah.
it. And this is both an insult and a compliment.
Yeah.
What I felt... Here's why I noticed it.
Yeah.
Because I felt it was condescending, wait.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the reason I felt it was condescending is because I'm used to you normally...
Yeah.
going, speak in there, do that. Whereas today you were like, if you could just speak into the microphone.
What I said was, can you speak nice and close into the mic, was what I said.
You were being gentle, is what I mean.
What's a new year? It's a new me.
She's normally very abrasive. So that's why I noticed it. That's all it was.
Listeners, I've walked into a tiff.
Every guest that comes here does.
Yeah, it's difficult.
Very rare.
We don't even know where I'm at until the mics come.
we listen back to it and go, ooh.
Oh, God, yeah. What happened there?
How rude that was to a stranger.
And I'm afraid, Ian, I do have to correct you on my name pronunciation. Don't worry, because the BBC announcer got it wrong last night as well. It's Aldred.
It is Aldred. Okay, yeah.
What did you say?
I said Aldred.
And really Aldred good. Actually is like an old English pronunciation. Mm. I like that. And I think it did come. Aldred came from Aldred.
But it would have an E after the A, wouldn't it if it was Aldred?
It would, yeah. Yes. I think not like Aldred, like the continuity announcer said last night.
Aldred.
Aldred.
I'll get that right now, completely.
There you are.
Now I've been told, I'll get that right.
We all dread Sophie.
That's the way of remembering it. Do you know what?
I don't think
I ever would either, because I think, who was the other lady we had on who was Doctor Who?
Katie Manning.
Katie
was on as well. And I've always, whenever I've interviewed Doctor Who related people, and I've had some dealings with Doctor Who people.
Well, you've been in Doctor Who, haven't you?
But only like briefly. I'm aware of the community and I'm aware of the fan base.
Yes.
And also people that work who are fans who have now become, like people like Toby Haydock,
yes,
who have become part of the establishment.
Mark Gatiss.
Absolutely that.
Nick Briggs. Yeah, Russell T Davies.
And they're all Moffat as well.
Stephen Moffat. Chris Chibnall.
They're all nice people.
They're all marvellous and gorgeous.
Yeah, but yeah. Are there any dicks?
No.
There must be.
Never met one in the world of Doctor Who.
Well, you were in it, so there could be one.
Yeah, there's one. But I was briefly in one episode.
What were you in then?
I was in Blink.
Oh, were you?
Yeah, I was in Blink.
That's so bizarre because, you know, Carey Mulligan?
Yes. Yeah, do really well.
That was her...
She's always on the show.
That was her first big sort of thing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I sat there watching it with my husband and I said, she is going to be huge.
Mm.
She'd be a good companion, but she's going to be big. And then the following day, I was walking along the parallel road to here, believe it or not.
Okay.
And I was on my way to an appointment. And there was Carey Mulligan walking down the road.
Yeah.
With her earbuds in.
Right.
And I stopped her because I just thought, I can't let her go by without saying something. So I don't know whether she'd ever remember, but she was stopped in the street by this bonkers woman who said...
Did she not know you?
No.
No, she didn't. So she wasn't Doctor Who savvy.
No.
No, I don't think... What I recall about it... There's only 2 days filming in Cardiff, and what I recall about it, because I spent a reasonable amount of time with Carey, really, because the one little scene I was in was with Carey.
Oh.
I was the owner of the DVD shop where they went into the DVD shop. I was Banto, which apparently is a name that was intentionally used because Chris Biggins did it in the audiobooks. He played somebody called Banto. It was one of those weird linky things. But I spent a lot of time with Carey, and I liked her. I did like her a lot. Mm. But the feeling you got around it, I felt that, this might be wrong, she had an eye on Companion.
Mm.
I felt that quite strongly, that she was, and that had been...
Who doesn't?
Yeah, I think that had been mooted as well. That was potential for that. But there was also a feeling around the set. And what she was doing wasn't like it was blowing you away, the acting, you know, there and then. But you could see she was really... Competent sounds insulting, but you could see that she was there.
She knew what she was doing, totally.
Yeah. But there was no stretch of her acting abilities within the scenes with me, other than... stopping from corpsing, which she didn't do. I made her laugh a lot.
Good for you.
I think she got a bit angry by it eventually. But there was a feeling around her, certainly in crew, and there was a feeling.
Someone special.
Yeah. Mm. She's gone stellar, hasn't she?
She's brilliant, that's why.
Yeah.
And I just stopped her and got all excited and I said, excuse me, I know you don't know me, but I saw you on Doctor Who last night. You were absolutely brilliant.
Right.
And then she looked a bit shocked. And I said, I was a Doctor Who companion
many years
ago, even more
so
years
suck
ago
on
now.
That.
So I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And it's so funny. I did that with, I went to see a show in Edinburgh years ago, and there was this woman in it, and I just thought, it was a two-hander, and I thought, whoa, she's good. She's just really good. She's got something. And then I saw her in a kids' show as well that another friend of mine was in. And I thought, yep, she's really good. And she'd watched Doctor Who. She said,
okay.
We had a lovely chat afterwards, and I said, you are brilliant. And she was very, self-effacing. And it was Miranda.
Miranda, yeah.
Yeah.
And I knew you were going to say
Miranda.
Did
you like that impression?
Yeah, yeah. Was it Orange Girls you saw? The show she was in was called Orange Girls. She was in a double act.
No, it wasn't. This was with Helen Lederer.
Oh, okay, yeah,
it was
yeah,
a show
yeah.
where she was playing a PA to Helen Lederer's sort of PR woman.
Right, okay.
And then she was in a show with Richard Ranch, a kids' show.
She did a fair chunk of Edinburgh's. That's where I first got to know Miranda, because we were starting at the same time. And as you can see...
Why haven't we never met then? Because you seem to know everybody
I'm
I know.
I'm not hugely successful. What happens with me is I tend to... We've been discussing this earlier in the show. I tend to burn bridges out of spite.
He tries it on every show. Every show
honestly,
he does it.
That obviously works.
I threaten to quit here constantly.
Every single show.
And all my
show.
Other work is just completely independent because I don't... Well,
is he a bit of a drama queen?
A bit.
Am
sorry,
I
mean no, not
no,
at all.
Am I that?
I wouldn't. No,
don't
do you know
come
what?
Over like that.
No, you're not a drama queen.
No,
you're,
but
you do say how you feel, and I appreciate that. So if he's in a bad mood,
yes.
We know the listeners know that he's in a bad mood because
oh,
he's
great.
Not hiding it.
If I hate something, I'll fuck it off. Basically, that's basically what it, you know. I've never gone. Oh no, stick with it because this could lead to something else. It's like no, if I'm unhappy,
yeah, good.
I will just stop it straight
good.
Away.
Everyone should do that.
But it doesn't lead to necessarily what other people would view as a successful career. But it does lead to. Independence that you're happy artistically with.
I think also that if you put up with stuff, it's very kind of destroying, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's
horrible.
Very, very
yeah.
depressing and soul destroying. And I think, I don't know, we put up with a lot, us human beings,
yeah.
don't we? So let's stop putting up with stuff. I mean, not being negative, not sort of like, oh, this is rubbish, but either, you know, because I think often we feel like we're a victim to something and
yeah.
we just have to be here. Blah, blah, blah. But actually, if you can actually... You know, go, okay, I'm taking responsibility for this.
Yeah.
Am I going to take any action? Am I going to do anything about it? If not, I'm going to stop complaining about it.
Yeah.
And otherwise, I'll do something.
But it's a delicate balance as well, isn't it? Because it's like, I wouldn't suggest... Well, I'd never tell anybody how to conduct their own career or what they do. But
no.
What I'd say, if you were leaning towards the idea that going, don't do things that make you unhappy, you still have to assess, well, am I just in a sulk today?
Yes, that's true.
I don't want to quit
have
my
I
job if I'm just in a sulk.
Wrong side
yeah.
of
yeah.
It?
But I think thingy. If you know yourself well enough and you're like, no, this is actually quite damaging, also in terms of your creativity, it makes you very numbed creatively as well
yeah.
if you're doing something you don't like. So yeah, I've done that a lot. Like, I was a stand-up comedian for 20 years and I just then was like, I don't like it now. I don't like it at all. I'm just so
well,
stopped.
Well, you move on. You evolve, don't you? And after a while, you kind of need to... widen your horizons, because otherwise if you're doing the same thing, I mean some people love doing the same thing over and over again, but if you're one of those people who goes, ooh, okay, my comfort zone is so small now, let's go and take a risk and try something else.
But you know, but it never sits well with me, that idea, because I do know some people like repetition and structure. I get that completely.
Yes,
but I've never heard a good argument for that in a creative. You know, an artistic person or somebody who's a creative,
yeah.
how you would sit in a repetition. Like, it's like, well, I saw it for years on the comedy circuit, and you saw old comics, been around for years and years, still doing the same 20 minutes they've been doing for 20 odd years.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And you're like, you may as well work in a bank and you'd get more money.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, if it's just about the money, you can make far more money.
It's like, are you enjoying what you're doing? That's the thing, isn't
yeah.
it? If they're enjoying doing the same 20 minutes...
They're not.
...for years and years...
They're not. You can tell by their attitude, the way they talk about newer comedians, the way they talk about...
Yes.
...you know, the circuit and...
They're stuck.
...the state... Yeah. You can... The bitterness is tangible.
Mm.
I'm not saying there aren't any who have been doing the same set for 20 years who are perfectly happy doing it.
Yes.
But I could name your names. I work on the radio, obviously, but...
Yeah.
...who you're like, nah, they're just festering...
If you're doing the same set for 20 years, and would you think you'd get kind of resentful towards the audience? Okay, surely everyone's seen this now. Like, why are you still coming to see me to see the same set that I've been doing for years and years and years?
Some people love seeing the same thing over and over again, though.
I suppose,
bands do it, I guess.
Yeah, true.
You know, there's plenty of bands who tour the same material.
But some of them must hate it. They must hate it at some point as well. Like the Rolling Stones must be like, I don't want to play that today, actually. I don't feel like playing that song.
But their volume of work wouldn't mean that they didn't have to. They could just go, well, we won't play that song tonight because I'm sick of singing it.
Sick of doing that, yeah.
Are you saying I can't get noticed? satisfaction from playing I Can't Get No
Satisfaction? Quite possibly, yeah. I can't believe they do anymore, surely.
But speaking of flogging a dead horse, Doctor Who.
Wow. Excuse me.
No, but that's an interesting case in point, because I know that you... Basically, what I like... And I'm not a big brain on Doctor Who at all. I don't even watch Doctor Who now. I think I watched Tom Baker's ones when I was a kid. I was never a fan of Doctor Who, but I didn't hate it. I was like, it's fine. But I like that. So there are people who would do convention circuits and would do all that sort of thing and make a good living off that, literally from turning up, being them, signing autographs, charging for the picture, whatever, doing selfies, you know, all that. Fine.
You're talking about my life.
I'm not. That, here's the thing. Well, again, I know loads of these people because I know I've worked on Red, you know, still work on Red Dwarf, and you know, so I know how that circuit works. And I'm a nerd fan myself, really,
yes.
Just about Star Wars and stuff. You know, I'm not slagging anyone off for doing it at all. But I really like. Shatner's a good case in point. I like people that were in something, maintain a relationship with it, albeit every now and again fall out with it or say something silly at a convention, but who also creatively work within it.
Right.
So Shatner has certainly written Star Trek novels himself. He's certainly done, you know, directed episodes.
Yeah, and film. He directed a film.
Exactly. And so I like that when they're not just going, no, I can just turn up and Bill Shatner.
Yes.
Hey, me and Leonard Nimoy didn't get on sometimes, but then it was fine, then it wasn't. You know, it's like, we've heard those stories a million times.
Yeah.
So the fact that you work creatively as well,
yep.
as well as maintaining the legacy of what you did back in the day, I think is really... I have a lot of respect for that.
Oh, thanks.
Not that you need my respect for validation, but you do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think there's a difference to that.
Yeah.
To someone saying...
Yeah, I mean, again, I think we're all different. It's horses for courses. And, you know, I've been lucky enough to have the opportunities and create opportunities as well. And I suppose after Doctor Who, it wasn't just that I was doing Doctor Who. I also had quite a big career in presenting.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then and lots of other things. And, you know, then the voiceover. When I had kids, I started doing voiceovers and... You know, I was Dennis and Dennis the Menace, and
yeah.
Tree Fu Tom and Tree Fu Tom, and you know, so it's. I think for me, I love going to conventions because I can see what a contribution I'm making to the people who come to them.
Yeah,
and I've had the most extraordinary conversations at Doctor Who conventions or science fiction conventions with people who've had their lives completely changed by Doctor Who and what Doctor Who's done to them, and I love that. I love that interaction with fans who, and a lot of science fiction fans. I don't know if you find this in Star Wars as well, but a lot of fans of science fiction are maybe people who got bullied at school or who are disenfranchised in some way. They don't quite fit in to so-called normal society, whatever that looks like, but. When they come to Doctor Who conventions, they can dress up.
Mm.
They can. It's a sort of respite for them from the daily life of not being accepted. And suddenly there's this place where everyone is accepted, every size, shape, colour, creed.
Yeah.
You know, however they want to express themselves, they can do it.
I'd argue that's fans in general.
Yeah,
when people are fans, fanatics, you know, of something, I would argue that's probably. I think the reason that science fiction fans sometimes, again, I'm not nerdy. I couldn't sit and have a conversation with someone saying who would win in a fight between Chewbacca and. I couldn't enter into that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't really go to conventions myself unless I was looking for a certain piece of memorabilia where it might be at. You know, I wouldn't enter into it in that way. I'm not that sort of fan.
Yes.
But I think, well, I'm getting this from my own work that has a fan base and from meeting people. And I don't think it's a universal thing, but I understand the disenfranchised thing. I understand the slightly difference, what would be considered the norm,
yes.
which is actually most people in the world, in reality,
yeah.
in their own truth.
Mm.
But I think with science fiction fans, the reason that sometimes gets labelled onto Star Trek fans or Star Wars fans or Doctor Who fans, whatever, as being ultra nerdy and ultra disenfranchised and weirdos and geeks and all those insulting things, is because some of their disenfranchisement, if that even is a word, will come from being mocked for being a fan of the thing they're a fan of.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So you wouldn't necessarily get mocked for being a fan of a band, even if you went to every single gig on their tour,
yes,
and followed them round and had all their albums in every possible format. You wouldn't get skitted for that, but you might get skitted for liking the thing that's got monsters in it.
And isn't it funny? It's like somehow there's...
It's fans stupid,
fans are perceived
yeah.
as cool.
Yeah.
Whereas science fiction is... nerdy.
But I think it's because it gets attributed to being a child thing, and it is, you know, Doctor Who is and isn't a kid's show.
Yeah.
Star Wars is and isn't kids' films.
Yeah.
Mm. Because it operates on many different levels, and the depth that, you know, as I say, I'm not a huge knowledge on Doctor Who, but I know enough to know a bit of thought's gone into it. It's not just like, right, we'll get in that blue box, we go to a planet, there's baddies there, we kill them, and then we come home. It's, you know, there's far more to it than that on human levels.
Yes, huge.
Yeah.
But yes, it's always... I think because Doctor Who, the character of Doctor Who, is a superhero, and Sylvester McCoy, who is my doctor, says this.
Yeah.
He says Doctor Who is a superhero.
Yeah.
And his superpower, or now her superpower, is the brain.
Yeah.
And doesn't need something external, except now Jodie uses a sonic screwdriver a bit too much, in my opinion.
I wish this show was live. You'd have seen those lights and then phones just light up.
Right.
You'd have been disenfranchised then very quick.
And I think, because, yes, Sylvester's doctor... We never had a sonic screwdriver at all.
Didn't need one, did you?
Well, the producer... he had me and my baseball bat.
Exactly, it was enough.
My cans of explosives. because the producer pointed out that if the doctor is always using the sonic screwdriver, then it's an easy way
There's
out.
There's no jeopardy. You can't have jeopardy if something fixes everything. Yeah.
And actually, to be fair to Jodie's doctor, she seems to use it more as a kind of... diagnostic tool.
See, you're backtracking. Yeah. I can see that you're thinking, oh, actually, yeah, I shouldn't have said that.
No, I do agree. And I can see, you know, I mean, maybe there's a little eye on marketing these days.
Yeah, of course there is. Of course
there wasn't
in
our day.
Yeah.
You know.
How... It's a tie that binds, though, isn't it? I know you've done tons of other work and you've been in tons of other things and varied work and stuff, but there is with something like Doctor Who, it won't go away, that.
No. And I think if you don't accept that...
You have to, wouldn't you?
You're on a hiding to nothing.
Yeah.
Because very soon afterwards, I realised I was doing all the presenting, but this would be... It's a worldwide phenomenon.
Yeah.
You know? I'm probably never going to be in a show, again, who, you know, that could have such appeal worldwide.
Were you aware of that going in, though? Was this at a time where there was an awareness that if you were in a science fiction franchise, that would just automatically... Because now you would know, okay, if you get a big part in Doctor Who now, then you're like, I wouldn't have to work again because I could just go and sign my autograph. I could do that. You know, there's an awareness of how... The structure around it that perpetuate a career, perhaps not the one you wanted, but you could still do it. Mm. But when you were in it, was that as strong or was that...
No, no. 1987, which is when I got the job. For a start, I mean, my fee was very small.
Okay.
And I realised I took home after my first week less than I had been in children's theatre.
Wow.
You know, working out the back of a van doing TIE.
That's saying something. If TIE's getting more than Doctor Who.
Yeah.
But was Doctor Who waning at that point?
It was. What had happened was that they'd put it on hiatus, as they called it, for a year.
This was great, wasn't
Baker.
It? Was it Michael Gray did that?
It was, and it was a sort of general, like... the guy who was the head of series and serials wasn't too keen on it either.
Right, okay.
And they just thought it had had its day.
Yeah.
Come on, let's have something different. And also there was a very vociferous minority of fans, as we find out now, who were causing problems. You know, they bring in and of course they're a bit of a thorn in the BBC's side. Yeah. And I'm not blaming that by any means, because it means that they were passionate about the programme, which is always a good thing. However, the producer was, he kept all this away from us, and he was sort of there beyond his time as well. If he'd been told in no uncertain terms that if he didn't stay on, then it would, they'd take it off. Right. So he felt sort of on a bound in a way to stay on, because he loved the show as well.
Yeah.
So there we were. And I was talking to our script editor recently, and he was saying, well, actually, it was a kind of quite a good thing, because it meant that they'd lost sight of it so much that they could just get on and do their own thing.
Mm.
So those last three seasons, really, with Sylvester, and then when I came in, there were all sorts of experiments and stories and stuff. And what Andrew Cartmell, the script editor, was saying was that they would, that the execs wouldn't even bother to look at the
tapes. Okay.
So we were getting away with, I mean, it came a cropper, not recently now, but a few years ago, the BBC was called up on Newsnight, and Andrew had to go and answer for a story called The Happiness Patrol, which was ostensibly about Margaret Thatcher and bringing down the government. And there was the Dalek story was about racism and so there were themes in there that possibly couldn't then. I mean, now it's great because you're seeing those themes right there, front and central. You know, like last year there was a story about Rosa Parks.
Right.
You know, last night's story was about, Tesla and sort of Edison. And so it's sort of...
That was 2 weeks ago, wasn't it, that one?
Oh, was it? Oh, 2 weeks ago, there was a story.
Time flies.
Well, I just got in the TARDIS.
Nice. Catch-all excuse for anything, isn't it? Hasn't it... It's been reappraised, hasn't it, the Sylvester McCoy years?
Yes, definitely.
Retrospectively, it's been...
He was a fantastic Doctor.
Yeah, but...
If you look back, it's like, oh my goodness, what he was doing with the character was extraordinary.
He seems like a nice chap as well. Oh. I've only met him fleetingly, but he seemed like a lovely, accessible eccentric.
Sylvester's one of my very best friends.
Good.
We share a birthday. We've often spent our birthday together up
in
Edinburgh.
Nice.
We're always
looking out for each
other.
He did loads of the Fringe, didn't he, Sylvester McCoy?
Yes.
I remember seeing him about the Fringe loads as well. Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, how wonderful.
You know, so he's a brilliant, brilliant man. And I've learnt such a lot in my life from him.
Right.
Because what he has is this sort of childlike wonder and curiosity about the world. So he loves travelling. So any conventions for him are a dream.
Yeah.
He loves them. So he goes off around the world, and I'll WhatsApp him, and he'll say, I'm just in some far-flung place doing a convention, and now he's got the Radagast from The Hobbit as well,
okay.
So that's kind of opened that field. Oh, yes, I'm on a cruise doing this with Doctor Who fans, and he's always having adventures.
How amazing.
Yeah.
But then again, of course he is. So if the Doctor has been well cast...
Yes.
Then of course it's that sort of person.
I think all 13 of them so far, and it won't change within 2 weeks, will it? No.
Well, you never know, do you?
Jodie could say that. She's not. She won't. It could be a twist.
Maybe I'm doing it. Who knows? You don't. I wouldn't be allowed to say either way.
100% not be allowed to say.
Exactly.
So all of those people who I've met, and I'm sure and as well the people on the films and blah blah blah, have all been extraordinary people in their own right. They are extraordinary characters, and I've had the great good fortune to meet them because of being on the circuit.
Of course,
And they're all there's something about each one of them that you go, yes, of course you were cast as Doctor Who.
People are nice, aren't they, generally speaking? It's awful, isn't it, when people get targeted. I'm going to quantify that by saying people are nice who work in entertainment, generally speaking. I always feel like it's very easy to be pompous about that sort of stuff, but then when you actually meet people who, you know, you could go, oh, all you do is go to, like I did it earlier on and said that, you know, all you do is go to convention and whatever.
Mm.
But when you meet them, it's like, you know very quickly that if they are actually a dick, there'd be no line.
No.
That goes round quick, doesn't it? You know
yes,
what I mean?
Exactly.
So they generally tend to be very gregarious, or certainly can fake it if they're not.
Yes.
Gregarious, warm, embracing people.
Yes.
Who don't talk down to the fans, you know, which is all you really want from something that's a property that has a particular sort of fan base, isn't it?
And the advantage is that we all love talking about ourselves, and it gives us a platform to do that.
Why have I not done conventions? Like, it's like,
I thought you had. Have you not?
I was asked. I didn't feel right doing it.
You should definitely do it.
Come on, Ian.
I don't feel right doing it. I think part of me is scared of going. Because I think I've told this before. I was asked to do a Doctor Who convention once. And they said, oh, yeah, we've got... what happens is we have 12 tables or something, and you sit on a table and have dinner with some of the fans and that sort of stuff. And I remember being on the phone to the bloke going, I can't sit on a table at a Doctor Who convention with my four lines in one episode whilst they peer over my shoulder at Colin Baker. just going, how have I ended up on this?
They wouldn't, because they're bored of Colin. They'd love you.
Yeah, actually,
He's been there loads of times, probably.
I did the Red Dwarf convention.
Not that you could ever get bored of Colin Baker. That's my caveat.
You've done it again. You've insulted Whitaker and Baker so far. Yeah. Baker C. I did that Red Dwarf convention because I know the Red Dwarf fan club, they're really lovely people.
Mm.
And that was a bit more informal, so it was kind of nice. And they kind of knew me beyond my role in Red Dwarf because I do the warm-up on Red Dwarf. So I'm sort of like a secret person that the fans know about.
Yes, that's
so that's more dealable with. But it's still... I don't think
there's
this
wonderful crossover you see at all these bigger conventions where... You've got the Red Dwarf, you've got the Star Wars, you've got the Star, you know, everything.
Yeah.
Game of Thrones. And it's bizarre because I can be in America and sort of going out for dinner with people from all those shows. And it's such a weird kind of conglomeration of shows and people and stuff. But it's quite wonderful.
I'd still rather they all like ate each other though. Just for the story, it's funnier. I like the idea of them having fights and stuff and being very territorial about their own property. That's my just
your dream. Why some fan fiction with that?
It's for my own.
Everyone's fine. I can say series 26 of Doctor Who is out on Blu-ray now.
You can.
Yep.
That's out.
And your book?
Yes, you can. Book's coming out on February the 8th.
Okay.
At Childhood's End.
Nice.
ACE. Do you get it? ACE. At Childhood's End.
Very clever.
Yes.
You know your market inside out.
I would love
that. It's been honestly lovely speaking with you. Like, it really, really has. And thanks for coming in.
And lovely mic technique, Sophie.
Oh, thank you. I haven't dared move. I've kind of nailed
it. Well, do you know what? I've seen. I know why you're good, because you've got radio presenter on your CV.
Oh.
That's why I knew you knew how to use a mic.
Credit to Nat for giving Sophie that media training.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
Now you can safely go to any other. If you ever get another interview,
you know what to do.
You can safely go to that. All your conventions, if you speak to a lot of people, you know exactly how to use the mic.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Honestly, there is no need to thank us. Cheers, Sophie.
Good evening and welcome to the Tremazzi Party.
Black Grape Tremazzi Party, and what better time, Natalie? I mean, you've already spoken to Sean Ryder, because I heard you flirting on the telephone.
Well, it was not flirting. Telling someone they're allowed to swear.
Sean, were you flirting on the phone to my producer?
It's not my chat-up line, but...
Me? No, we don't flirt.
No.
It felt like flirting.
No.
We're joined by Sean Ryder on the Teflone. How are we today?
Hello, what was that?
I said, how are you today? How are we? I said, how are we? Which I've never said before.
I'm all right, how are you?
I'm all right, man. Yeah, I've just...
Let me change ears on the phone.
All right.
Right, that one's a better ear. Can hear better through that.
Do you have hearing issues?
Wax. Especially when you just finished tour. Through touring, it just builds up, so I've got to get it syringed.
I thought they'd stop doing that.
What, syringing it?
Yeah.
I don't know.
When was the last time you had your ear syringed? That's a good opening question, isn't it?
Well, basically, I get one of those like plastic syringes thing and shove all the goo down it. They don't even use that stuff from the chemist. They use the olive oil.
Yeah.
Olive oil and vinegar.
Oh, I've never used vinegar. I've used olive oil. I've done that
vinegar
thing.
What sort of vinegar that you can drink?
All vinegar, innit?
Drink vinegar.
What?
Cider vinegar.
Yeah, cider vinegar.
That's not a drink.
Wait, yeah. Sean.
What?
I mean, honestly, I don't want to come down heavy on the health advice, but you're not, just because it's called cider vinegar, you don't drink it. It's not a drink.
No, apple cider vinegar. Yeah, I drink it every morning.
You really shouldn't. How much do you drink?
About 5 mils.
I don't know how much.
With
that
water,
is.
I assume.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
All right. What's that good? What? Why?
Well, read up on it, lad.
It's good for your skin. It is good
is
for
it?
Your skin, cider vinegar.
It's good
you,
for everything.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, my skin's fucked. I'll tell you what, Sean. Jet, like, I've met you before.
Have you?
Yeah, I met you. I met you very briefly. Definitely won't remember it. I met you very briefly after I was the warm-up artist on Adrian Childs's That Sunday Night Show.
Oh, right. Okay.
I did the warm-up.
I remember doing the show, but that's a few years ago now, that isn't it?
Yeah. I think it was. Yeah, I think Catherine Tate was on that night as well. I think.
Right.
I know Catherine already. And you were on there, and there was certainly an air about you where it was like, fucking Sean Ryder's on, this is ace, you know. And it was like, I honestly literally said hello and said bye because I was on my way out and stuff. So it wasn't
That's
like...
That's weird that he doesn't remember you.
It is
that
bizarre,
detailed
yeah.
conversation that you had, yeah.
But what I'll say, though, as someone who's a fan, by the way, primarily of Black Grape as well.
Yeah.
I've seen you at certain points, obviously, like on TV and interviews and things like that, where you've looked fucked and you've sounded fucked. And sort of speaking to you now, I wasn't expecting such clarity from you.
Well, I wasn't fucked in 2010 when we did the Adrian Charles thing. I haven't really been fucked for about near getting on 12 in 2020 now, so getting on 20 years.
Yeah, I don't. Do you know what? Retrospectively, I could have probably worded that better.
Yeah.
But no, do you know what I mean, though? There were times I remember on the 24-hour party people, on the extras on that, and it was like, oh, Ryder's looking like...
I wasn't on that, mate. I was nowhere near 24-hour party people.
You were on, you're on the extras on the DVD. You definitely
are.
How much do you want on it?
I'm not on anything. I had nothing to do with that movie. Absolutely nothing.
I can guarantee you...
If it's anything, it's not to do with the movie. Well, I'll put you... $10,000 bet on it.
Well,
I had absolutely nothing to do with Michael Cole Winterbottom's movie. Our Paul was in it, and there's other people involved in it, but I had nothing to do with it. I wasn't on set, I wasn't anywhere.
Well, maybe.
What was the extra that you saw then?
I can tell you what it was. It was a map of Manchester, on the screen, and you could click on little bits. One bit was Happy Mondays, one bit was Stone Roses. I think Sidey might have been on there. I think one bit was Frank Sidebottom, I think. And when you clicked on the Happy Mondays one, there was interviews with you. So it may have been that they did interviews.
They didn't do interviews with me about the movie. They took interviews from somewhere else.
That makes sense.
Okay, well then that's fine. Then nobody's wrong. Because you are on the DVD, but you didn't do it bespoke for the DVD.
No, absolutely not. Right. I don't know anything about it. Better go and look for some royalties.
I can say, actually, you are right.
You definitely should.
Take a virtual map and stop off for a series of interviews, including John Ronson chats about Sean Ryder and Ian Brown. Oh, there we go. The Happy Monday, Sean Ryder and Bez provide their jittery take on the Factory Records days.
Yeah, that's been took for somewhere else, because I didn't do any promo for that. I had absolutely nothing to do with it.
Well, were your thoughts... I'm sort of detecting a bit of... did you have an issue with the movie?
No, I think the movie's great. I think it's, you know, really funny. It's caricatures. Everything in that movie is a caricature of somebody. I mean, you know, but it's a funny comedy. If I look at it from an outsider's point of view and you're just a movie goer, then, yeah, it's a funny film, but it wasn't... You know, people wasn't really like that, but like I say, caricatured. You know, the guy that was playing me in that film was playing the caricature of Sean Ryder, who was, you know, went on the TFI Friday and swore and talking about shoes, you know, so... Because I'd never met the actor, and I'd never met Winterbottom. Like I said at the time, what year was that made? It was 90s, wasn't it?
Yeah, it might have been 98 or something like that.
Yeah, well, I was in rehab when all that was going on.
Wow, okay. So it was... See, I think that was my... Because I'm 46 now, and I think that was my first proper knowledge of the Happy Mondays was watching that movie, even though I was in my teens when the Happy Mondays sort of broke and when the whole Manchester scene broke, and I'm from St Helen, so I'm relatively nearby, and there were people that I was friends with at school who were going to raves and stuff and were going to the Hacienda and all that, but I was never really... I don't think I was quite either emotionally or... in age-wise.
Yeah, they was a bit on it more than you was.
It's absolutely that. Yeah, it's totally
that.
They
were a bit more clued up than you.
Yes, I'm trying to say it in a way that doesn't make me now feel like I've missed out.
Well, it's funny, it's not just you, right? Because it's like, you know, the Stone Roses sort of gigs that they did a couple of years ago, a lot of the people in that crowd, I'd probably say half of it, right, at the time was like listening to Wham.
Yeah, well...
You know, I mean, there's people that didn't even know who they was at the time, so, so, you know, a lot of it's built up afterwards.
Well, I wasn't doing that. I can tell you now that I wasn't
listening
to Wham.
Why, Wham are great.
No, but I wasn't. I'm just saying I wasn't listening to... Because I wasn't listening to Happy Mondays either.
What were you listening to? What were you listening to?
Well, I was kind of... Do you know what? I was kind of... I think my music
takes... The Bay City Rollers.
No, but I was
Mud. Shwaddy waddy.
I wouldn't have a bad word said about either Mud or Shwaddy
waddy. No, I won't. I won't as well.
I was listening to certainly Beautiful South and House Martins. Wonder Stuff a little bit. I think if they were around then.
I mean, that was a bit later, wasn't it? The Wonder Stuff
at
that time?
No, I
don't
think
so. No. Were they there? Okay.
Yeah, that was...
Not before us, because we was an 80s band, really, right. So. I mean, I think the Wonder Stuff was late 80s,
Okay. Yeah.
I'd say roughly the same sort of time period, I think, that was going on. But I was also, on my credibility front, I would say that whilst I wasn't going down the Hacienda, I was going to Frank Sidebottom's gigs, and I was, do you know what I mean? I was well into my comedy and niche comedy as well.
Yeah. Well, you get 4 marks for that.
Yeah, there we go. So I can trade off on that, can't I?
Yeah.
Just because I didn't go and have a drug. So I went to see 24 Hour Party People when it came out of the cinema, and that was like my first proper understanding of...
Well, I wouldn't say that. Get me away with that. You wouldn't get a proper understanding from that, but you get a good laugh out of it.
But musically, you would, I think. I think musically, it's relatively credible musically, isn't it? It's sort of...
Musically? I'm not going on about the music.
No, well, I am.
Well, I'm talking about what you think we was like, or what... people behaved like in that movie, and the story of Factory Records, and it's not there.
It's
really
not a documentary, is it?
This interview is starting to feel like Miles Hunt all over again.
Miles Hunt?
Yeah, we had him on the show.
He is a bit, isn't he?
Well, we were a little bit late. Do you know what, Sean, right? Genuinely, as I say, I'm a big fan of the Wonder Stuff, and Miles as well. I actually speak very highly of Miles. He gave me some music to use for free on a podcast that I did, and I don't speak... So the first time that I interviewed him, I was dreading it, because I knew that he could be a bit prickly, and he was lovely. Like, it was such a nice interview. And then I interviewed him again, expecting more of the same, and he just come on like, do you know what I mean?
Right. Few personalities.
Yeah.
There's a few personalities going on there. I've got about 6.
Right, okay. how difficult are you at your worst?
I'm not difficult, mate. I've never been difficult.
At your worst, though?
Me? Oh, at my worst? Twat,
okay. But we all are at our worst, aren't we, surely?
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Well, yeah. This is what I'm getting to say, to ask you, anyway. There is a question here, by the way. When I went to see 24 Hour Party People, I went with my friend John. Now, John's from West Orton in Wigan. He was a big Happy Mondays fan, and he was into all that. And by the way, I knew of Tony Wilson, and I knew Tony's story and all that sort of stuff. I got it, I just wasn't engaged with it particularly. But I asked John last night, we've only recently started speaking again after like 20 years, me and John, and I said, oh, I forgot to tell you, I'm interviewing Sean Ryder. Have you got any questions for Sean Ryder? And he sent me a question to ask you. And then, right, here's the question, you ready? So this is just verbatim what he sent to me. He said, when he played Dreamland in Margate, what was he pissed off about as he had to be encouraged to stay on stage by Bez and Rowetta?
When was this?
Yeah, year would be helpful, wouldn't it?
All that info
I'll
is all
Google
I've got.
I'll Google it. When was
That's
it? Dreamland. Did you say Dream? Where was it?
Dreamland Margate.
I'm Googling.
We're going to find out for you now, Sean.
And that, sorry, was that with Mondays?
Yeah, Bez and Rowetta. Oh, does Rowetta ever do anything with Black Grape?
No. Okay. Is it recent?
Oh, no, I don't.
I would imagine so. Because he lives down that sort of way, and he hasn't done for... He's only done that for, like, 10 years. So I would imagine it's revival time, you know. 2019?
We did it, like, last year, was it, then? 13th of July last year, apparently.
OK, all right. I'd just come out of having a operation, and I couldn't walk, and I'd gone straight out. I'd come straight out of the hospital and gone on stage.
Fair enough.
So, and also I've got, what's it called, sciatica in the other leg.
Oh, fuck, okay.
So if I'm going off stage for any reason now, it's because I can't stand up.
Because you're just in agony, yeah.
You could sit down. When I saw Phil Collins, he was on an office chair on stage.
Please don't ever talk to Sean Ryder like and refer to Phil Collins.
Phil's all right. I don't mind.
Thank you, Sean. I like Phil. He's good.
No,
yeah,
it didn't go
him.
Off. I mean, it's just agony, you know, especially sciatica, and then you've just had a full hip replacement operation. It's murderous.
How old are you, Sean?
57.
Okay. So hip operation isn't ridiculous?
Ridiculous?
No, I mean, for that sort of... It's not like...
No.
Yeah.
I mean, it runs in the family. My mum's had it.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's a few people in the family that have had the hip operation. In fact, I'm actually going to be having another one very soon.
Another hip operation?
Yeah.
Same hip?
No, I'm going to have another hip replacement in my other hip.
Wow, so you're now getting to the point of bionic.
Oh, yeah.
I fucking love that. What other things would you consider?
I do beep when I go through the metal detectors at the airport.
That's amazing. And I would imagine if anyone knows you, you'd already be flagged up at the airport anyway.
Well, no, I mean, the thing is, I've been going through Manchester Airport fucking hell, they've known me there for years, nearly 40 years.
Yeah.
But since all my hair fell out with the alopecia,
right,
all my body hair, the lot gone.
Yeah, has it?
So I look like Uncle Fester now, so they don't get on me as much. So when I walk through and I do buzz at the metal detectors, they all do come running over because you've got a bald-headed fella there who looks angry.
It's quite a life, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
Like, your existence is quite a life. It's sort of a... like I say, so because I missed Happy Mondays first time round, I didn't miss Black Grape when Black Grape became a thing.
Yeah.
And honestly, and this isn't sycophancy or anything like that, it's my go-to happy music.
Oh.
Even though it's not like, I don't mean it's like all jolly and stuff, you know, because the themes that are in Black Grape, there's some deep and dark stuff in there as well as political stuff as well, but I will happily put Black Grape on vinyl particularly as well, in the house, loud, and I find it a lifting thing.
Oh, that's good, because it's meant to be cartoon music. I mean, all the stories that we write with the songs, they're basically, you know, little short, strip cartoon stories.
I've played Daddy as a Baddie on this show tons of times.
Have you played the new album?
Not on it. You've not got it on the system.
No,
have you?
I don't.
I've got it on my Apple Music. I could just play it. I could play it. Do you mean Pot Voodoo?
Yeah.
I could play it because I was listening to it this morning. Again,
by
the way, not because I knew you were on.
Right.
I just got it on.
10 more big points for you then, that's great.
Thank you, mate, thank you. Is there any more Black Grape in the pipeline?
Probably, yeah. We're going to do another album, yeah.
How's the balance with that? Because you still do Monday stuff as well, don't you?
Yeah, we just finished the Monday's tour now, really, so we've knocked it on the head for about 2 years now. We're going to do this... couple of festivals, few festivals this summer.
Right.
But, and then knock it on the head for 2 years while I'm going doing another Black Grape album, and we'll take Black Grape out instead of the Mondays.
So is that an important thing for you? Because that's quite unusual, isn't it? Where you have somebody who's well known to have two different projects that coexist at, you know...
Well, Damon's got about fucking 10.
Oh, yeah, that's true as well. And you were in them as well. You did Gorillaz as well, didn't you?
Yeah.
I remember your head being sticking out of that desert. That's how I've remembered it. Is that right? It was ages ago.
Or something, yeah.
I think it's an exciting thing, but is that an easy thing to balance two different, you know?
No, it is now. I mean, when, you know, being straight and, you know, not up your napper, you know, and it's really easy.
Yeah.
You know? Really is. But I mean, you know, it's the thing with Black Grape is it's still sort of new for us, you know, so it's still dead exciting.
But it ain't new in reality, is it? It's like, that was 90s as well.
No, I meant new coming back.
Oh, I see,
you know,
sorry.
We've not done anything with Black Grape for over 20 years, so we've been doing what, Black Grape now for the last couple of years, 2 years if that.
Yeah.
You know, so... I think we made the album in what, 2017?
Right, yeah, that would be the last one, yeah.
So, so we do another one. So working on that and getting new stuff, it's, you know, it's new and exciting.
Well, I don't have many bands where I would buy an album without hearing, like, a second of it. Like, do you know what I mean? There's not many in my life where I would buy something on trust. And I bought Pop Voodoo on, like, completely on trust. I was like, no, I will definitely like it. Do you know what I mean? But I had heard nothing from it at all when I bought it. And put it on. And the other thing I said about Black Grape as well, again, not being sycophantic, just telling the truth, I think they're instantly accessible. I think that music is, it's not the sort of thing where you listen to it and you sort of then, oh, I'll have another listen and see how it, and then eventually you come to the conclusion like, oh, that's really good. I think it's instantly accessible.
Yeah, well, great. That's good pop music.
How many points is that there?
Oh, that's another, you know, 20.
Nice one.
Quite that's a bit right now, aren't you? About 50 now.
Getting really close to backstage passes here. Can I ask you one more?
You can have backstage passes whenever you want.
Mate, I think I'd be scared.
Why?
I don't know.
Of what? Scared of what?
I'm relatively shy in real life.
Well, listen, I won't be there. I'm in and out now.
Yeah.
I mean, I get there to the show about 10 minutes before and then get on stage, and as soon as I'm finished, I'm off.
Then I'd feel even more of a dick, because I'd just feel like I was just hanging about. Do you know what I mean, though? There's no worse, is there, than backstage where...
Well, Kermit will sit around with you and, you know...
But don't... Who are you to deny me this moment? You can't go, oh, no, I'd love to meet you. Thanks for letting me promote myself on your show, but I'm not going to spend more than 20 seconds with you backstage. Why can we not sit down
and
just have a chat?
Well, come and get in the car, then, when I'm getting out. I get away from the venue. I can't stand the madness anymore. Come back to the hotel and we'll watch the news.
Sean, I'm not even fucking about now, right? I'm not doing this just for the radio. I will take you up absolutely on that offer.
I will come to the gig.
I'll fucking wait round the back for your car, and I'll be sat in it when you get there, and
that's
you'll go,
right.
Who are you? And I went, don't you remember, we arranged this.
Yeah,
and
that's
then
cool.
We'll go back to the hotel, and we'll have just a grown-up chat.
Yeah.
And a laugh.
Which is this, sorry, which is this?
I'll have Wayne with me.
You have who?
Wayne.
That's fine, I don't mind, I'm not...
Yeah, Wayne's my role manager, so he holds my hand now.
That's absolutely fine.
Texts me everywhere like an old... an old geriatric fella.
Right, but what I don't want, and you can say this to Wayne before I even get there, before this even happens, you can say it to Wayne. What I don't want is I don't want Wayne giving it, oh, Sean's tired. Oh, Sean's
no, you'll be in the car with us.
Yeah, you already sat in the car, aren't
you? I've been in cars with other people where they've practically put me out at traffic
tired,
lights.
Mate. It takes me at least 2 hours to come down.
Right, fine.
That's why I watch the news.
Right, well, I'll be getting the best of you then.
Yeah.
I'll have seen the show and I've clapped along to all the music and I'll be getting the best of you in real life.
Yeah, that's good.
That's all I require from any of my musical guests. All I require from any interview, Sean, is that I am best friends with a person by the end of it.
That's good. Okay.
Yeah. So just checking, this is the Black Grape Tour. This is not an evening with Sean Ryder at the Water Rats on the 21st
of Feb. No, this is what we're talking about is the Black Grape
Tour. Black Grape
Tour. If he wants
later.
To come to the evening, that's
could come
I probably
evening.
Would. Do you know what? Do you think that the evening with is safer for me?
No. I don't know, yeah, you're right, yeah.
I don't want to get, like, elbowed in the face.
No, you don't get elbowed in the face. I mean, it's...
By you? I mean, what do you think's happening?
Especially at the, the evening with.
Yeah, the evening with sounds like
it just depends on whether when we're there, we either get our Sun Daily Star audience or our Guardian audience.
Is there a real split in that with your audience?
Oh, yeah, and we get them both, you see, mixing together.
See, I think at a gig, even though I would really love to see Black Grape, I'd enjoy that. I'm not very good in big groups of people. The ideal gig for me, right? Royal Festival Hall, everyone sat down.
Right, well, this is better for you than an evening with, because it will be sat down, won't it? Seated. Calm.
Well, come at an evening with.
All right, I'll do that. Why don't I do that first, and then if we gel, I think we will. But if we gel as like real life friends, I don't mean like just I don't mean showbiz friends. I mean like proper real life friends. If we do
I
gel,
I haven't got any friends.
Well, then I am perfect for you because I've got none either, Sean. But I don't want. I know you're clean and stuff. I don't want any talk of me having a drug.
No, mate, we've not been there for 20 years.
That's what I mean. I know, but I don't. I am sometimes a bad influence on people as well.
No, I won't have any drugs there, mate. You'd be thrown out of the car.
Well, I won't have any drugs
with
me either.
Drugs, you finished.
Right. Well, then, what we are looking at now. This is how I'm planning it. 21st of February, we've got an evening with Sean Ryder.
Yep.
And in my diary, it will say an evening with Sean Ryder, and then it will say underneath. And then a clean evening with Sean Ryder.
Where
we watch the news, because Sean wants to watch the news.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we have a chat and stuff.
Yeah.
Perfect.
You don't need to put clean evening anymore, because Sean is clean, so it's just an evening.
I'm just going to emphasise it on my... For my own records, I'm going to emphasise it on that.
Fine, yeah. Sounds nice.
I've got one more question for you.
Go on.
Have you ever, and I mean ever, from the second you started in what we'll call show business, if you like, it's a horrible phrase, but you started in an artistic pursuit, have you ever had, for even 1 second, any media training?
Any media training? No, none whatsoever.
I said that earlier. I said that I felt that would be the case.
I said that I thought you would have been encouraged to have it and maybe sent on it, but you might have turned your back on it.
No, never.
Good. I prefer that answer. Though I'm wrong, I prefer
that
answer.
No media training, no counselling.
Perfect. Do you know what made that better? The drag on the fag at the end of it.
I don't smoke. It's me vapour.
Well, oh, right, yeah.
There you go. Well,
I've not smoked them things, but I'm coffee nails for about 7 years now.
What have you got in your vape? What sort of vape have you
cherry.
Got? Cherry. Oh, cherry. Do you not get a bit repetitive?
No, I don't mind it.
Why have you not got black grape in it? See, thinking about
it. Because it tastes a bit bubblegummy for me.
It really does, because I've got grape in mine at the moment, because I've run out. I normally only have coffee in it. I get coffee ones. I normally only ever vape coffee flavours. And last night, I ran out of coffee, couldn't get to the vape shop, obviously, because it was shut on a Sunday night.
I've not even seen coffee ones.
They really are to get, but if you get them, I will guarantee, if you're a coffee drinker or whatever, if you like coffee, they're great. There's a company called Yorkshire Barista, they're called.
Okay, you have to bring me one.
Right.
There we go. Present.
Now we get into it. I will.
That's always
now,
nice.
Well, what milligram do you have?
I'm on the air at 18.
Fucking hell. Is you might as well be back on fags. Right, I'll get your 18. But again, this is what happens, isn't it? Every time I try and make a showbiz friend, it all ends up about what, rather than what they can get me, it's what I can get them.
Of course, because you want to be. Sean isn't asking to be friends with you. You are asking to be friends with him. Why has he given you anything?
I'm not asking. I'm offering to. I am extending the hand of friendship.
Right, yeah. It's nice to bring a gift when you do that.
Right, I'll do that. You can bring me a gift as well, like a record or something.
Yeah, I'll bring you some flowers.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice.
If I could tell people for the rest of my life that there was one night where Sean Ryder brought me flowers, I will take that over any material gift.
Yeah.
Just for the anecdote.
Go and get tickets. Evening with Sean Ryder at the Water Rats in London, Friday the 21st of February of this year.
Where is the Water Rats?
It's King's Cross, isn't it? I think.
Is it?
I don't know where it is.
Do you know Sean?
I don't know, no.
I don't know where the venue is.
I thought it could be Camden. Now I'm thinking it could be Camden.
Water Rats? I thought it was one of those sort of like secret societies.
Yeah, is it?
No, showbiz.
Oh, Gravesend Road.
That's what the Water Rats is, isn't it?
They do have a lot of gigs there, though.
Yeah, no, but the Water Rats is like the old like Les Dawson and...
Oh, really?
All the old Tom O'Connor and all them. It's their show. And that still goes, that. It's a,
right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But this is a different
King's Cross.
Apparently.
It's in King's Cross.
Yeah, it's on Gravesend
Road. I might
ask
for a membership, then.
You definitely should.
Will.
Again, you could shake things up in there, Sean.
yeah.
Mate,
I'm sure with that old lot, that old school lot, they put me to shame, that lot.
I think...
Those 70s comedians.
Do you not think you'd get along with them?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, because it's... Well, the ones that are still alive, there's not many of them still alive now, really, but the ones that are still alive, I would imagine, would be pretty relatable to you from the area you're from.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm great. Me and Roy Walker are really good pals.
Yeah, he's lovely, Roy, isn't he? And his son,
he's brilliant.
His son Phil's absolutely lovely as well.
Who's that? His son? No, I've never met his son, but it was his son that sort of put him on to me, Roy.
Well,
once he knew his son liked that music, it was all good.
Well, he's got two sons. He's got, well, he might have more, but the two that I know, he's got Phil Walker, who's a comedian as well, and Mark Walker, who's also a comedian.
Yeah.
I get along well with Phil. I really like Phil.
But yeah, he's a nice fella.
Bobby Ball, do you know him?
No, I've not met Bobby.
See, you could bring Bobby Ball, because Ian's friends with him.
Bobby does a lot of acting now, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. He's good and all.
Yeah.
And he's a like proper lovely chap as well.
Yeah.
Right, I'm going to introduce you to Bobby Ball.
That'd be good.
I'm going to make a showbiz supergroup. All the people that I know in real life, so it'd be me, you, because we know each other in real life now, Sean. I can now say to people I'm friends with Sean Ryder.
Well done.
For me, that was like the most condescending backstage dismissal that I've ever had in my entire life. There was no acknowledgement of any truth. But he went, yeah, well done. Yeah, tell people that.
Oh, you can, mate.
Right, I'm gonna.
Bring Hacker.
Hacker the dog. Do you know Hacker the dog, the puppet off Kid Selly?
Who?
Hacker the dog.
No.
Right, well, no.
Don't worry about that.
It's new kids' telly. I've not seen any new kids' telly for a few years now, since my two youngest have got
Peppa
Pig.
It's crossed over a little bit. Zippy, do you know Zippy?
Zippy from...
Zippy, yeah. Zippy, you know him? Boy,
that's 70s. Yeah, but I know the bloke who does Zippy.
Yep.
All right.
Who else do I know famous? Vegas, Johnny
died,
Vegas.
One of those guys.
The sort of... It gets passed along,
essentially. Yeah, it's one of the original.
When one goes, another one takes over.
Jeffrey.
Yeah, he died about a year ago, didn't he?
Yeah. But
Johnny Vegas, do you know Johnny?
Don't really know him. Met him slightly a few years ago.
Oh, well, I'm sorry that you couldn't get through to him, but basically I know him, so I could probably introduce you properly. We could probably be like, I'll just say, hey, Sean Ryder's...
I just want to be mates for you, not him.
Oh.
Well, how about that? I'll tell you what, Sean, what would also be amazing, and in a way I'm annoyed that this has been recorded and broadcast.
I can tape it up.
Fucking, if I brought Vegas to one of your gigs...
Yeah.
And you point blank ignored him in favour of talking to me, it would make my fucking day.
I mean, I would want to film that as well, because that would be incredible.
It would make my day.
It might tempt him to suicide.
It won't go that far, because he will cotton on straight away what's happened.
Yeah.
Because whenever I'm in his company, I spend a lot of time standing to the side. Do you know what I mean? Where people are coming up to him and all that sort of stuff. So I spend a lot of time taking selfies of myself with him doing a selfie over my shoulder with someone else, of me just looking fed up at having to be hanging about. And I did it with Saints, because I follow Saints rugby, and I did it where I spoke to some players and said, after the game, crack on, you know me, but you don't know Johnny. And it had him in bits.
Did it?
Yeah. So if I could do that with Sean Ryder as well... I don't mean to speak of you in the second person, but if I could do that with you and all, perfect.
Set that up.
Yeah.
Bring him along. Brilliant.
This has been a really successful interview for me.
Well, you're our new middleman.
Yeah.
Getting introduced to everybody.
Yeah. I'm loving this, mate. Well, look, mate, thank you so much for joining us today. Like, really,
pleasure,
really appreciate
thank
it.
You.
And best of luck with the Black Grape Tour and an evening with Sean Ryder. I do think an evening with Sean Ryder just sounds like it. Are you comfortable doing them things? Are you comfortable?
Oh, yeah.
Because I guess that's as close to stand-up as you'd get, really, isn't it? You know, in terms of... Is it just you on stage on your own, or do you have somebody mediating?
Well, no, basically what it is, I'm up there with a journalist or whoever... You know, and he interviews, and we do that for about an hour. Where, you know, I mean, I get a different interview every night. So
why can I not do that?
I was
about
to
do that.
You could host one, Ian. This would be perfect.
And then for about an hour or an hour and a half, we throw it over to the audience, and then they get to ask whatever.
So you'd be better off in the audience. I don't, Ian, I'm getting there.
I've lost you both.
Oh, have you?
Oh no, sure.
Sound like tiny little people in a speaker somewhere.
I don't believe you. I think you heard us say that I could do that and just went, oh, bad line.
No, you can do it.
Well, host one.
We're always looking for other people
to host it.
Right. Keep
it fresh.
I'm genuinely sending my number on.
You've really gone. You want to press one of your buttons because you really have gone.
Oh, no. It's always the right time. He's about to tell you to contact.
Well, you're fading.
Oh, that's better. I can hear you.
All right. Well, I'm wrapping up anyway, mate. Don't worry.
We'll be in touch.
Okie doke.
So lovely chatting with you, man. Like, genuinely is. And I'm glad you're in good fettle and all the rest of it. And best of luck with all the new stuff.
Cheers, pal.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. I'm going to play some Happy Mondays now, even though I've never heard of it.
Right.
All right, mate.
All right, nice one.
Take care,
Sean. Have a good one.
All the best, man, you too.
Ta-da.
Come on. Sorry, we're just in the middle of one of those famous Happy Monday long bits of noise where all the druggies can just fall about the place at the Hacienda. But other than that...
We had a great time.
Liked him, Sean.
Loved Sean Ryder, it was great.
Do you know Sean Ryder?
I don't know Sean Ryder.
So you're not friends with him?
I'm not friends with him,
I am. I'm friends with him.
Well, hold on.
I'm friends with him.
Excuse me. What happened? Sorry.
He just said to me... He literally just said...
Do you know what he did?
That I can say that I'm friends with him.
He paused, took a hit on his vape, if that's what you call it, and then went... Yeah, sure. It wasn't initially like,
but he couldn't really hear us on the call. And then afterwards he went, no, you absolutely are my friend.
What? Was that what
he said? He said something like that.
Yeah.
He did. We're joined now by Magical Bones. I've genuinely been calling you Magical all day.
Really? I don't mind Magical.
No, Bones is better. Because you came in and you introduced him and Bones. And I was like, oh, that is far cooler. Bones,
I think they both work,
better.
Really.
Imagine being called Bones in your real life.
Yeah,
it's a bit of a stranger, but it was a nickname because I used to be kind of skinny.
Okay,
so.
Yeah, same. I was called Bones at school as well. I think that's what they were saying.
Yeah.
It's either Bones or Bowl or something. And we're talking about your tour, Magical Bones Black Magic, a national tour, 21st of Feb to 12th of June of this year.
Yeah.
And I'm not, like, familiar with you, with what you do.
Yeah.
And I think that's the best way of doing an interview.
That's good,
I genuinely do.
Okay.
Because now, rather than just going, no, of course you did, blah, 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 now I can just learn about your stuff. We can have a, you can learn about me as well. We can, and who knows? I might even take on another friend in this show. I've already taken on Sean Ryder as a friend. I think I got on well with Sophie Aldridge.
Yeah, Sophie will be good. I was going to say maybe you could take Bones for the evening with Sean Ryder, but unfortunately, it's the, he's on tour on the same date on the 21st.
Yeah, it starts.
You
on
can't
the same
come
day,
to that. Unfortunately,
yeah, yeah. Sorry, Bones, you can't come.
He'll
that.
Do another one. We'll take you to that.
You're not allowed to come that one. I reckon me and Sophie Aldridge were kind of friends by the end of it.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
She said, I hope to see
we
you.
Can be
yeah,
I mean, you by the end
swap numbers
we'll
and stuff.
Well, let's
yeah,
not
yeah.
get ahead of ourselves. We might not, but we might not get on at all. But if we do get on, then I might.
Oh, you might. Okay, yeah.
I might take you on as a friend. This is the problem with this. It's people come in and they all think they're the celebrity.
I mean, yeah, kind of, because they have been booked for a show.
It's me, innit? I'm the main talking point of all this.
Yeah, sure. It's not Doctor Who, is it? We're safe if it was
what
you.
Do
yeah.
you. Exactly. What do you? What is your show?
I'm a magician, so okay. I'm a street magician, and this show I've got is called Black Magic because, as a black magician,
yeah.
growing up in the UK, I was interested and fascinated about the history of black magicians in particular,
yeah, yeah.
and finding role models. So I explore that, and it took me into a whole new world of studying about the history of black magicians. And
I can't think of a black musician, a black magician.
It's quite hard, isn't it?
Yeah, like, that is mental. When you were saying that, and I was like, I can't think of one.
No, I can't either.
There is no. I don't want to disrespect black magicians. And there are black magicians in the UK,
of course. Yeah, yeah.
And we do have some well-known ones, but. When you're looking for those role models, those Paul Daniels, Debbie McGee's,
yeah, yeah.
You don't.
She wanted a magician, though, was she not?
She was a magician, kind of. She was an assistant.
Became one.
We became a magician. Yeah.
yeah.
But when you're looking for those role models that can say, oh, you know, because as minority kids, sometimes you need to see role models in certain environments, certain spaces, just so you know. Oh, okay, I can be that. It's like. It's like if you see a black president, Obama, you're like, oh,
yeah,
shit,
yeah.
I could be a president, you know?
Yeah. You can't.
I can't.
You'd have to be born there.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Maybe prime minister, who knows?
Yeah. You could do that, yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's allowed.
But yeah, anyway, so this show is about me playing tribute to one black magician in particular from the 1800s.
Right.
His name is Henry Box Brown.
Okay.
And he has an amazing story. So he was a former slave.
This is a real chap, this.
This is a real story.
Yeah, okay, so it's not a story within the...
This is when I was doing my research and learning about the history of black magicians,
yeah.
I came across Henry Box Brown. And he was a former slave born in Richmond, Virginia. And he came up with this incredible idea of escaping to freedom by literally mailing himself in a wooden box on a train all the way from Richmond, Virginia... to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, where slavery had been abolished.
Wow.
Literally mailed himself in a box on a train, and he became this big advocate for, you know, anti-slavery movement, and also for private mail. they used him as the ambassador because no one thought of opening that box. So they were like, oh, wait, hang on. This package had travelled all the way from
how
27
far
was
it?
Well, I mean, it was a 27-hour train journey.
Okay.
And no one opened the package until
it
arrived.
In that situation, it's plausible to survive that, but it's also equally plausible that he could have died in there.
He could have died, and it's a longer. His the backstory to that whole is a longer story than, you know, I've just sort of summarised.
Yeah,
it.
Of course.
But he then travelled to the UK because he was
just
a fugitive.
Just normally.
Yeah, yeah, he did. Exactly. Yeah,
I don't like the idea that he got a taste for it.
Let's travel by box. No, he was a fugitive, so obviously they in America they were looking for him. So he then came to the UK
because of the slave, because of breaking that thing.
Well, yeah, because he in Pennsylvania slavery had been abolished.
Yeah,
but in Virginia it hadn't been abolished at the time. So he technically was a criminal.
Was wanted there.
Yeah, so he was wanted, and he traveled.
Fuck me! What a world!
It's mad,
yeah,
isn't it?
Right.
Look, that's ever. That is fucking mental, isn't it?
It is mental. And also, I'm really surprised that I didn't know anything about this story.
When you're
before.
Telling me the story, it's bits of it are familiar to me now.
Really?
I think
okay.
I might have known about this.
I'm surprised this
has
not
point.
Been made into a film.
Everyone
or something,
says that to
right?
me. Everyone says, is that going to be a movie? You know, who knows?
Yeah, yeah.
But he came to the UK and lived here for 25 years, touring his anti-slavery magic show.
Yeah.
And you think about a black man touring the UK in the 1800s. That's like amazing within itself.
Yeah.
And he became a magician. So it was a show about Henry Box's Brown's escape. And he would do all sorts of different type of acts within that. But it was about anti-slavery and promoting that. And I just thought it was a brilliant story, and I was so inspired.
Mm.
And it's actually part of the closer of my show. It's what is the inspiration for the closer of my show.
Do you post yourself to the next gig?
Magician never reveals his secrets. Yeah,
of course. I like that idea of a framework of a, because you could just go out and do a magic show, and you'd sell tickets, and it'd be ace.
Mm.
But I like that idea. Is that an important thing to you to make it? It's like when comedians go to Edinburgh, and it's like, I'm not just going to do just stand-up. There's going to be a point to this show. There's going to be a through line to
the show. I think when there's a context and a point to performance, it makes it more meaningful, more powerful. And
it's
like,
certainly more engaging on an emotional level as well as being on an entertainment level, I think.
Yeah, yeah. But that's my sort of motivation for creating.
Yeah, yeah.
And also this idea of black magic. Amongst my culture as a black man, there's a stigma attached to it, blackness, just in general.
Right.
And particularly in black magic, there's sort of this negative kind of thing, you know, the idea of voodoo and hoodoo, juju, and they've all got their ooze. But these things are sort of like demonized within black culture, you know, like my parents were Christians, and it was like, no, don't. Even now when I show my mum a trick, she still I'm like, mum, it's just a trick.
Oh, really? Really? Yeah, like some dark forces are going on here.
They're just this, and there's this sort of idea that it's kind of, it's not cool. So I wanted to sort of challenge that because, you know, in Western culture, like, magic is seen as something we celebrate, you know, it's like entertainment. Whereas if you go to places in Africa or the Middle East, it's still seen as what David Blaine would be doing. He'd be like, burn for that.
So there's no acknowledgement whatsoever that it's not magic, is it? Do you know what I mean? There's no such thing.
The concept of it being entertainment is still not really resonating parts
That's
of
interesting.
The way it is here, you know. And you know, I'm talking about just things like, you know, card magic, coin magic. I'm not even going as far as like putting frogs or putting pin, you know, the kind of stuff Blaine does, which is a bit more extreme.
Yeah.
We still see that as entertainment. So anyway, my thing is about sort of exploring that in the show and changing that narrative and looking at a more positive narrative. And this idea of blackness, because, you know, like when you talk about blackness, there's always got this, like, you know, black is got negative attached to it. So I just want to talk about the positive side of it.
Yeah.
So these are things I sort of incorporate in the show. This is the narrative loosely themed. So it's not like a story. It's just ideas in the show for people to just digest and think. And then there's this great magic.
I think I know what's going on here.
What do you mean?
I think what Bones is doing here now, this is very clever what you're doing here now. Because I've now dangled this carrot of friendship.
Yeah.
He's now made it all about being black and all that.
Right.
So that afterwards, if I don't become friends with him, it'll be, oh, because I'm black, man.
That's exactly what I was
saying.
So now I'm completely backed
into a corner. Because if I decide, and by the way, at the moment I'm undecided, but I'm wavering more towards being friends. At the end, you know, being like best friends.
You did what's known as a Sean Ryder there. You didn't take anything. You just had the moment of pause. That was really nice when you said that.
Yeah,
he
did the same thing.
He did the same thing.
That's media training.
But only that was a little sip of tea that you had. Yeah. Sean was vaping. But well done.
This is unbelievable.
So that's the arc of the thing.
Just went straight past it.
Wow.
But what's in the show is more is me. So when I'm talking about celebrating, when I talk about celebrating the blackness and black culture is actually like music or dance. So my name's Bones because I'm skinny, but I used to be a break dancer.
Right. Okay.
So there's that in the show. So it's got break dancing. I get a Rubik's Cube. I get the audience members to mix it up and I solve it. whilst doing a move called the windmill.
Amazing.
One of my signature tricks is a backflip, where I'll just pick a card, throw the cards in the air, I do a back somersault, I catch the card that the person is thinking of.
Brilliant.
Wow. So it's got all that kind of, it's so even if you know, even if you, you're not really, and I don't even want to sound harsh, but even if you don't care about the narrative,
yeah,
you can come to see this show and just watch great magic.
It's just stuff personality led, because I think there's a thing where you could be a technically brilliant magician. I keep saying musician instead of magician. A technically brilliant magician, and people would appreciate that as a skill and would get it. But I think, and I may be wrong here, but I think the well-known magicians, there's a degree of personality led. It's in sometimes, I think David Blaine's a good case in point, the lack of personality, do you know what I mean? The actual detachment thing is the selling point. So is that something that you think
that's
about?
That's a very interesting thing you said, because there's actually, amongst magicians, when we meet up in our little
magic circle.
Magic circle, yeah. I was going to say Hogwarts, but that is actually magic circle. That we have this debate, because there's some magicians who have like personality and there's some who don't. Mm.
Yeah.
And what's more important is the magic more important. If I make this levitate right now.
Yeah.
Oh my God, can you?
I'll save it.
There's about a bottle on the table.
I'll enjoy that.
I'll save my powers.
No, but if you could,
powers.
I would be like, whoa.
I'll be best friends with you straight away. Can't do it. But you can't.
You know, I don't do magic on request. That's the thing. So,
why do you prepare it?
Well, I actually don't want it to levitate. I'll be too scared.
Dead giveaway.
We had a magician in here once who guessed my PIN number. I've never been the same since. Do you remember? I can't remember his outfit. Freaked me out too much. Yeah.
Okay.
And he enjoyed using my PIN number.
No, he didn't.
He did.
No, he didn't.
He did.
Because I interfered with the trick and he couldn't do it. Do you not remember?
No, he did get it right on the bit of paper, though. I wrote it down. Sorry,
what was his name?
I was going to say, what's your PIN number?
You were going to say that. Yeah.
I'm going to have to look it up because I can't remember right now. I will look it up. He was from an ITV2 show.
Yeah, I remember. I can't remember it was, though.
I'm going to Google it now.
Do you have tattoos?
Yes, he did have tattoos.
Who's that cat?
Loads of tattoos.
From what I remember, loads of, I mean, yes.
I'm not going to say his name.
Do you know what? Fuck me. I just had a little moment there where I thought it would be a possibility that you were then going to just pull a mask off. I thought, imagine if that is, and you just went, was it me? What an amazing topper that would have been.
I think it was from The Magicians. No, it wasn't that.
It wasn't the man.
You Google his name. It definitely wasn't him. He didn't have face tattoos like that, I think.
Wasn't the man.
I won't say
his name. Hold on. I'll put the mouse in there for you. Oops.
This is weird, isn't it? We're having a good interview then, and we're running out of time.
Now we're going and Google.
Now we're Googling.
Yeah, Google his name. Google his name.
What's actually happened? There we go.
Oh, yes, yes. Now it's all coming back to me.
Was that who it was?
Yeah.
We can say it was.
Yeah, same minute. Yeah, was him. Yeah.
I don't really.
I didn't Google him. You did that.
Did you remember him? Yeah, he did have tattoos. Yeah, it was him.
I'm sure that's the one that I interfered with a trick because I knew what he was doing. Because the thing is, right, I can do magic, maybe.
Yeah,
I'm good at magic.
No, but
I like that question you asked, because like, what's more important? If you see something amazing, do you care about the person's personality?
Yeah,
or does that help?
Well, even the trick aside, from a purely business point of view, in terms of you know furthering your career and stuff, it's what is the best way of doing it now? Is it to come out and be showbiz, or is it to go out and be mysterious? Because I don't know much about magic at all, in terms of like, I wouldn't say I'm a fan of it or anything like that. I've been learning a bit of it recently because I've got Masterclass and Penn & Teller have got a Masterclass on there. It's really interesting. Yeah, it's really good. I've been doing the thing where you have a ball in your hand and you take it out and then you make it disappear. I've been doing that one, but I'm not very good at it because I can't separate my head properly.
Right.
Really?
I keep going, I meant to put that hand down.
Yeah.
I meant to look at that when I take it. I meant to look at that hand, but I keep forgetting to do that. What now? Slim down. But I admire it as a skill. You know, I admire anything as a skill that is actually, you know, a technical skill. But I wonder whether it would be better now to make. I guess it's a choice you got to make. Are you the breakdancing personality?
Personally, I think like any performer, just whether you're a magician, you're a musician.
Yeah.
I think you're always better if you
show who you are
because people like. They say this in sales, don't they? They don't buy your product, they buy you.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think, like, if you guys like me and we become friends, you know.
Oh. Go on, yeah.
It's a yes for me, Bones. We're friends.
I'm putting it out. But I think, like, if you like someone, then it doesn't even matter if their trick's crap.
Mm.
Like,
agreed, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There might be a shit magician, but he's a great guy.
Well, to be honest with you, I guess magic is the ultimate sales, isn't it? That's because you're selling a lie. Like, you're always selling a lie with illusions and things. And the better you can sell that lie, I mean, not to the point where somebody burns you in the village.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah,
but do you know what I mean? That if you can sell it as... Because everyone knows, well, I guess, in Western society, we know it's a trick.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's accepted. Because otherwise, and I've always said this about that, otherwise people would run out of theatres screaming.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
They'd be like, it's fucking it'd be on the news. It's fucking blood flying. It would actually be the top.
Oh,
the
sword one. That'd be really scary. They cut you in three. It'd Jesus
watch
Christ.
Watch The Messiah, because it's watch The Messiah on Netflix. Because it's
okay. I've seen that.
Have you seen it?
It's good. Yeah. I enjoyed that, yeah.
It's famed around that kind.
Yeah.
So just check that out.
Okay.
But anyway, because it's kind of what you're saying, that could you create this cult? Like, if people really believed you had these powers, you'd be like Jesus.
Yeah, you absolutely would, wouldn't you?
But people understand that it's entertainment.
Is that not a temptation to abuse your powers?
Well, it was. It was actually abused, wasn't it? People used to abuse it and you just use magic tricks and claim to have.
Well, psychics abuse it. Yeah. Ultimately, you know what I mean? Yeah. That's ultimately a magic trick.
Yeah.
We're out of time. I want to talk for ages more.
Yeah, I didn't even
go and see Bones on his national tour.
What did you not get to do?
I wanted to show you like a trick, but you know, we were just talking.
I'm on the radio.
It would still work. I'd start for a trick.
You could literally sit there and go, look, watch this. Look, my hand is off. And I'm like, no, it's not. I said, you're in denial. I just did it.
Well, you start on the 21st of Feb in Salford.
Yes,
you're touring Salford. All the way to
Lowry.
June. Yeah, the Lowry, yeah. You go everywhere.
That's lovely. Yeah, so we got,
Didcot, Nottingham, Wellingborough, London, Leicester Square, Leicester, Birmingham, Hull, Guildford, Maidstone, Southend, Swindon, Maidenhead, and you end up in Crawley on the 12th of June.
And again, these are all really nice venues as well. I always like it when I see venues and go, I know that place.
Yeah.
So Mac in Birmingham's fantastic, Northern Farm in Maidenhead's an ace one, Swindon Arts Centre, these are all really nice venues.
Yeah, and you can check my website, www.magicalbones.com, and you've got all the dates for the tickets and how to get them as well, and follow me on Instagram at Magical Bones.
But if you are friends with him in real life, you could just ask him in the pub when you're all hanging out and that. And I have decided in these final moments of the show that I will be friends with you.
Thank God. I'm so grateful for that.
Again, I'm not being presumptuous. You are allowed to deny my friendship if you don't wish to be friends as well. But it's been a real pleasure chatting to you, man.
Thank you so
best
much,
of luck
guys.
With the tour and stuff. Thank you as well, Sophie Aldred. Thank you to Sean Ryder as well. Thank you, Natalie.
Thank you, Ian.
Me crying.
I was just with a relief.
I wish to see you again next week. Oh, no, I'm not. Am I? Oh, maybe.
No,
maybe.
I don't know yet.
Drop.
You've been listening to a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.